This episode of Camp Nightmare is brought to you by Wonder Book and Video.
Go to wonderbk.com today.
Future Fantascope and the Nerd Camp Network present Camp Nightmare, a podcast for happy campers. There'll be fun, fiends, and ghosts, maybe even a few murders, and of course, you're all invited.
Welcome back to Camp Nightmare, guys. I am JB.
And I'm Jordan, and it is now November.
November.
And the month of feasting.
Yes.
Today, we're going to feast on a little knowledge from our local author, Jess McHugh.
I feel like she's no longer ours. Like, Jess has
she's the world.
She's doing the damn thing, dude. Like,
everyone.
Like, you'll see in the interview, she's very humble about it. She kind of downplays it, but like, I'm telling you, man, she's making it.
She's out there killing the game right now. She just landed back from
the Halloween Hangover Barnes & Noble convention in Richmond.
And she's going to tell us about that, and she's going to tell us about all the cool stuff she has coming up, including some very exciting news involving weird tales. But before we get into any of that,
let's get into some what's new.
First on what's new, a little true crime haunt news. That extreme haunt that we keep bringing up here on the show, McCamey Manor, is now officially being investigated by the Tennessee Attorney General.
Fucking right.
After, apparently that Attorney General also has a Hulu subscription and watched the same documentary everyone else did.
Not in my state.
And he's not today.
Not in the great state of Tennessee.
He's become like Dennis Hopper in Texas Chainsaw 2, where he's like, this is the devil's playground.
Yep.
Bring it down.
Yep.
So now he's being investigated for real, which I don't know how it fucking
took
this long.
This may be the only time in the history of time that Tennessee's preoccupation with Satanism and being and warding off evil has paid off.
Right. If they want to bring down their old Tennessee Christian justice on somebody, it can be this guy.
It needs to be Russ McCamey.
It can be this guy for sure.
Wasn't he already in trouble?
I thought he was. Yeah, he always seems like he's in trouble, but he somehow evades it. But maybe now he won't. We'll see.
Maybe.
Maybe all it took was a major streaming service documentary to just get this guy.
We're going to find out together.
Yeah, we'll take this journey with you guys and update you as that develops.
Up next in Stephen King news, the MGM Plus series, it's a prequel series to Salem's Lot, Chapel Waite.
Starring Adrian Brody,
will not be coming back for season two. It's been canceled.
I haven't even seen season one, and I'm kind of bummed about this
anyway. I've seen part of season one, and meh.
Meh.
Like, it didn't really deserve to keep going.
Not even with the great Adrian Brody?
Dude, it wasn't terrible. Like, it wasn't unwatchable, but, like, it just could have been so much more.
Mm.
And I feel like there's so many places they could have leaned into the Stephen King version of horror so much more and just didn't. They rely a lot. The show relies a lot on Adrian Brody being, like, a brooding actor.
Yes.
And like,
he is good at that.
He is, but like, it gets old.
Sure.
Yeah.
You gotta have something more. Okay. Well,
I'm not shocked they didn't renew it.
Well, you know, it's just Stephen King shows have bad luck. You know, Castle Rock really didn't deserve it.
No,
the way they did that.
Was some grade A bullshit.
Yeah, that was some serious
like
bullshit.
I don't understand why they canceled Castle Rock. I felt like it got the views that it needed to get to last.
I've seen way dumber shows get renewed for multiple seasons.
Looking at you, Scream Queens. Looking at you.
For real, though. And up next, Godzilla news. Officially, you can go right now onto our X-Files or the regular old fashion internet and watch the first 3 minutes of the first episode of Monarch Legacy of Monsters.
Oh, really?
Which is very cool. It features John Goodman running through Skull Island and monsters fighting each other.
The real amazing thing here is John Goodman running anywhere.
He looks good doing it, and he's got a whole... In fact, I found myself thinking this. In the middle of this whole monster fight, he's evading claws and whatnot, and I'm like, you know, this is a very physical scene they got John Goodman doing right here.
I feel
he's
like
not a young
body,
man.
It's a body double. They just AI'd his face onto.
That's unfortunately like the world we live in. That's probably the truth, or at least could
he's
be.
Just
the
John.
Truth.
John Goodman doesn't seem like someone who moves fast.
He was moving pretty fast on screen, but you're right. Maybe it's movie magic, but I don't know. It's a pretty physical role that he was bringing to it. But either way, it looks pretty sweet. I'm stoked about the. I was already stoked about the show when they announced the Russell.
Yeah.
The dynamic Russell duo.
And we're just a couple days away from, or maybe a couple weeks away from Godzilla Minus One being released in theaters, which I am super stoked about. It looks amazing.
It does look amazing. That's going to be coming out in IMAX, too. So
I know.
Like, I'm really excited for, I like going to the movies in the wintertime. It's a fun thing. I think everybody kind of likes doing that.
Yeah, but I think
we're
going to have to go to Regal to see it.
It's going
to
be Regal only?
I don't think it's going to be at Warehouse, man.
Well, you know, whatever. So be it. I haven't been. They've redone our Regal, and I haven't been there yet, so we'll see what's going on.
Did they?
Yeah, I did.
I didn't know.
I don't know what they've done, but they did things.
Okay.
If that, like, 90s Jurassic Park sit-down blaster game that I haven't played for 15 years is gone...
I will burn that place to
the goddamn
ground.
I will raise hell.
Oh, my God.
I was just thinking about maybe going over there and playing that. Now you're going to get rid of it 15 years later?
Yep.
Come on.
Yep. So that does it for What's New. Up next on Steamin' Pile of Streamin' Picks... up first on Peacock, Five Nights at Freddy's. I'll be honest with you. I haven't watched this movie. I'm not going to watch this movie.
Oh,
this movie
gonna...
isn't for me.
I haven't watched it either. I will watch
Here's
it.
Here's the review I will give you of it that I have heard, which is why I think that if you have kids that are of a certain age, it's worth it. Greg watched it with his son, Orion.
Yeah.
And Orion gave it rave reviews.
Yeah.
And Greg was like, there's so many in-jokes in it that are like... specific to people who have played the game and used everything, but he was like watching Orion stop and explain everything to me every time it happened. He was like, it was like me watching, or he said it was like him watching a Marvel movie with somebody.
Well, that's what you want, right?
Exactly.
So that's good.
Exactly.
So, and that explains why there's two the reviews on Rotten Tomatoes for this thing are vastly different. The critic reviews are super low. But the audience reviews are super high.
Yeah, because it's not for critics.
But it's for the fans of the game, which
Absolutely.
That's what it fucking should be for, right?
Agreed. 100%.
You know? So good.
By the way, I did find The Werewolves Within game.
Oh, I
it's
have
on,
not played
it's on,
that.
You can buy it for like $2 on PlayStation.
Great.
It's great.
What kind of game? I've seen the movie. And
it's
the
almost
movie...
like a card strategy game.
Interesting.
With quick cuts in it. Okay. But it's the biggest difference is it takes place in like a weird medieval fantasy setting.
Love that.
But
because
it's still,
I didn't
like,
even know,
but it's
the
still
movie...
like a remote lodge somewhere.
Yeah,
and
it's
like
a
people around
a
fire trying to figure out which one of them is the
werewolf.
You basically have to figure out who is the werewolf.
Digital card. See, that movie made me aware that there was a game, and I had never heard of that before.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the movie is very loosely based on the game.
Well, sure. It's a fucking card
I know that
game.
Now having played it. up next on Shudder, I Am Not a Serial Killer. This is a great, great... maybe like one off for a weekend night when you know want something to watch while you're eating dinner. It's a great it's a very cerebral guy. Basically the main character knows that there's a serial killer in his building, but he's also a serial killer. So not only is he racing to like expose this dude, he's racing to make sure that he doesn't get exposed. It's a good. It's
does
a great...
the other serial killer know about him? Is it spy versus spy?
I'm not gonna give that part away.
Okay, fair.
But
enough.
It is kind of spy versus spy. It is, yeah, kind. It's kind of Mr. and Mrs. Jones, but serial killers. Up next on Max, The Yeti Massacre. You know, it just felt like
is this
maybe
what it
now,
sounds like it?
It exactly what it sounds like.
Love it.
And
I love
although
Yeti
it's,
movies.
It's it revolves around it's so basically it's historical fiction.
Uh-huh.
It revolves around an actual incident in Russia. Where a bunch of people disappeared, and it just, you know, throw a Yeti into it.
And they're just like, what if it was Yetis, you know?
Yeah.
And in Russia, that's a very real possibility.
Yeah.
You know, and, very possible.
Up last on Tubi, The Last Thanksgiving. There's a real shortage of Thanksgiving horror films out there. And
I feel like it's kind of on a resurgence. I mean, like Eli Roth's Thanksgiving is coming out.
Yeah.
This film.
Well,
that's
the,
all
so
I
the premise of this
of.
Film is basically it's just a crazy family that kills people that don't like Thanksgiving. And goddamn right.
All right,
God
sure.
Goddamn right.
They're like, ding dong, do you like Thanksgiving? They're like, no. And they're like,
wrong answer.
Get them, Bubba.
Yep. That does it for the Steam Pile of Stream Picks. Up last, the short film of the week.
Godzilla versus Megalon.
Here for it.
This is a 10-minute short film. If you guys saw the Godzilla versus Gigan short that came out recently, this is sort of the same treatment, but with Megalon. So it's some really cool visual effects. and CG and some badass monster battling. So what else could you possibly want? If you like Godzilla and you like watching him fight other monsters, chances are this is for you.
That's up
on our X-Files. You can check out all the shit we've been talking about today. That's about all we have for what's new. Let's waste no more time and welcome Jess McHugh into the studio to talk about everything she's got going on.
Yeah, we're
going to
dive deep into the McUniverse. Sorry, I had to say it.
Jess McHugh, welcome to the studio.
Howdy.
Hey,
and
thank
welcome
you.
To the show.
Thank you
for
having
back.
Me.
For sure, dude.
So you were just telling us you just got back from an event in Richmond. Tell us about that.
Yeah, it was Halloween Hangover 2, so it's the second time they're doing it. It took place at Barnes & Noble in Libby Place in Richmond, and it was a blast. Yeah. It was just so much fun. And for a lot of people, this is their last big event of the year.
Sure.
I think there are a couple more. So everybody was kind of in this kind of state of relief and like very Aww. Jovial. A lot of these events can get very stressful, very intense.
Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of people think it's, you know, they see pictures on social media and it's like, wow, you get to hang out with your friends. What work, you know?
Yeah,
like,
quote, but they unquote. Have no idea what your agenda yeah. is while you're there, what your
yeah. friend plus 500 strangers.
It's very stressful. It's very anxiety inducing, but this felt very calming and, you know, you get to see your friends and celebrate each other. And apparently Richmond has a very big
oh, yeah.
horror reader community. Yeah. So
Richmond
people
has
were...
a big artistic scene in general.
Yeah.
The International Film Festival there's a big mm-hmm. deal. They've got a lot of good venues that like a lot of bigger musicians.
The Poe Museum
come
is there.
The Poe Museum, it's, there you
yeah.
go. Yeah.
There was a bunch of like really cool stuff around. I wish I'd had more time to explore. I went into downtown a little bit and went to an Irish pub that apparently had a pervy ghost. I tried
pervy.
To entice him.
What kind he, of pervy
the
ghost?
Best kind of ghost.
He apparently, like, you know, pushes men that are being ungentlemanly, and he tucks the hair behind the ear of the ladies.
So that's not that pervy.
Well, 2023 it is.
Well,
I
don't know. It's
still, it's
think
not
about
consensual.
The think about the ghost we just talked about with Dan Eckhart.
It's true.
That's well, that was more of a pervy
person who was haunted. That ghost was just a poker.
So yeah, we just talked to this guy who deals with ghosts. Let's just leave it at that.
Yeah.
He told us that there was one person he dealt with, and the lady said that there was a ghost in their house that was attracted to her and wanted to have sex with her, and on occasion, she would let it happen.
Okay. Why not? You know, just for change.
I mean...
Yeah.
Mix it up.
I just... Yeah. It felt assaulty.
He's like, how come you never make breakfast after? Because I'm not alive.
Because I'm a ghost.
Because
I'm actually shocked that
like,
I could even do
what
this.
What Dan Aykroyd fever dream is this?
Because I'm actually a metaphor of your own psychosis. Sorry.
Yeah.
I wanted the ghost to be pervier, which is the opposite of what I want
You're
out
like,
of living people.
Boring.
No, sure.
Like prude ghost, more like it.
Yeah, he was very standoffish.
But you didn't experience any pervy or prudy behavior while you were
no,
there.
No, there
supernaturally
was a,
speaking.
There were a group of authentic Irishmen that were just singing.
Oh no!
Responses
oh, I think you,
to
did
everything.
You post a story. About
I did.
The,
yeah. I did. It was very bizarre. Yes.
They were group singing.
Yeah, they were just. They had
were
a,
they drunken and like clinking their glasses together
in, like, the
as
I'm
foamy
Irish
beer
contract
flew.
That says if you get around more than three other Irish people, you have to start singing.
They had a song response set up to like everything.
They all knew the
songs
song. Of the old country.
Yes, of
very
course.
Hobbit-like.
Yeah,
yes.
Right? Just busting.
That's
into
how
the
they
green
communicate.
Dragon.
Yeah,
it was very interesting. Brian Keane was like, "Who wants to take bets on you know how long it is before I talk to these guys.
How many verses does the song have?
Yeah. No, they turned out to be quite lovely. So it was
Hell
fun.
Yeah,
they always do.
Yeah.
That's the thing. That's why they're singing all the time.
I mean, the Irish are a good people. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm saying.
But it was a really good time. And Barnes & Noble, I was surprised that they would host like an event full of horror
authors.
Honestly
was shocked that Barnes & Noble is still a thing.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't know, like,
that's
it
cool.
was a big one.
That's
too.
Cool that they're like repping indie authors.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it was great. It was really great.
How'd you get involved with that?
I just a social media.
Yeah,
I guess they had people reaching out. Yeah, I sent them like a DM and was like, I'd like to
Hell
be
yeah.
involved in this. And yeah, and I was very lucky to be.
You've been up to a lot lately. You've been publishing a lot. Weird Tales.
Yeah.
Dude.
Yeah.
What?
I know.
So for those of you who don't know, Weird Tales is a like sci-fi and fantasy mag that's been around for 100 years now.
Yeah.
Right? And
wow.
Jessica is in the 100th anniversary edition.
Yeah.
And first blackout poem published
ever,
in Weird Tales?
Ever. First blackout poem.
Wow.
Yep.
Yep.
It's pretty crazy. And I made it from a Lovecraft story.
That's,
so
what
story?
That's awesome. Yeah.
Pikmin's model.
Love Pikmin's model. Great story. So, what's your poem called?
Arched Bridges.
Cool.
Yeah.
Jeez. Excellent.
Yeah, it was a really fun one to make. Jonathan Mayberry reached out to me and asked if I would be interested in specifically doing a Lovecraft poem. So I made like four of them for him to choose from, which is what I usually do.
So they reached out to you.
Mm-hmm.
That's excellent.
Yeah.
Is that typically how that happens?
This kind of thing, probably.
Yeah.
At this stage, I am very lucky to get invited to things more often than I have to submit.
That's awesome. That's
which takes a little
stress
off.
That's where you
want to
be.
But it's also an extra layer of stress because it's like now I have to like deliver something. They expect me to deliver something great.
Yeah. Sure. I've always said like I don't really want fame. I just want to get to whatever level of fame it is where you don't have to carry your own gear into a show.
But
like,
I don't know what that is. I feel like that's an illusion, bro. Do you remember when we had Tom Savini on the panel and we did that? And who was loading Tom Savini's equipment? Do you remember that?
Tom Savini.
Tom fucking Savini.
That
was
a
his
surreal
equipment.
Moment though, because he drives like a fucking souped up Camaro. And I was at, and it was like the last day of the con that we were at with him, and like everybody's tired, everybody's spun, everybody's at the end of the rope. Some of us had been
up.
Some of us had been up drinking the entire weekend. Mm-hmm. It was just so I'm like out on the steps of this hotel smoking a cigarette trying to gather myself, and I see Tom Savini
thinking
like,
about his life.
Yeah. Well, I see him loading his own shit into his car, and that wiled me out. But then when he's done, he just sort of like went to the driver's side of his car, paused for a moment, put his sunglasses on, like stared into the distance for a few moments, and then got in his car and just sped off. And I was like, "What just happened?
Did I just
witness a movie?"
And
always behave.
Single tear.
As if someone is filming you, and this is going to be used in the documentary about your life.
Yeah,
because that
Tom
feels
Savini
like the last last shot.
Exactly.
Driving off into
that's
the distance.
That's what I'm saying. So I don't know, but it's a good dream to work towards. Julia.
I just want health insurance,
reality
baby.
Or not.
I know. What
is it?
Health insurance.
Health insurance.
That's when I'll feel
cool.
I made it.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
That
and
is
like
cool.
When I can afford my own private health insurance.
Yeah, when
like,
I
go through
so.
Ooh,
that's cushy.
Yeah.
That's the promise.
Never
when every little tooth pain and strange looking mole doesn't send me spinning into panic.
Dude,
then,
I'll
feel like I've made it.
This whole conversation is such a statement about the existential crisis that we live in now. It's wild.
Yeah, because before, you know, without health insurance, you just have to convince yourself that that thing's not that important.
It's all right.
You know?
Yeah.
It'll be
fine. A tooth will fall out on its own.
Well, yeah. A new one will grow in just like it when I was a child.
Yeah,
you know?
It'll be good. Mm-hmm.
That's as far as I know.
And, you know, I had a good run.
Yeah, I had a good run.
Yeah, listen.
If a tooth falls out, two more will grow to take its place.
Listen, not getting that bone set at the hospital, worst case scenario, my arm heals a little crooked.
A little wonky.
That's it.
It's character.
I'll come back stronger than you can possibly imagine.
You know how much harder it's
going
to be to break that bone?
Yeah. Come on now.
Yeah. That's how that works, right?
Come on,
God, I hope.
So what else you got going on?
I have, my 30th book just came out in August.
30th book.
I'm still trying to find a copy of the Arthurian.
Oh my gosh.
Now,
yeah.
You do include all the pen names and the ghostwriting, or no?
I do include those. So I include like the books I wrote for the WNUF sequel.
Yeah.
Because that was 28 and 29. So.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Cool.
So I include all those. I think the only one I don't include is I self-published a collection of like humorous things and writing prompts called Virtuoso at Masturbation and other McHumorous musings. So that's the only one I don't count. Mm-hmm. But
masturbatory virtuoso.
Yeah. So,
30th, congratulations.
Thank you.
That's wild.
Yeah, 30 and 15 and years.
What was the 30th book?
The Quiet Ways I Destroy You.
And you won an award for that, yeah?
I haven't gotten nominated or won an award or anything for it yet, because it just came out in August.
It's
so.
A novel?
It is a blackout poetry collection made from four different copies of Little Women, and it's 155 poems.
That's fucking brilliant.
Four different copies.
It's massive.
That's... So all those Little Women have created one massive...
That is what it's about.
Wow.
It's a cosmic horror blackout poetry collection.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and it's all about kind of like how Little Women connects us, kind of like that mycorrhizal fungi.
That's wild.
Like, just grows us all together into one big, like, super marmy.
Yeah. That's fair.
Yeah, and it's wild. Yeah, it's really fun. Wow. It's kind of like body horror, cosmic horror, queer feminist horror. So,
what's your favorite Lovecraft story?
I really do love Shadow over Innsmouth.
Yeah, that's great.
I feel like that one, when I read it, I could smell it. Like, yeah. You know, I could hear it. So yeah. That was really effective.
Well, and I think that's... Yeah, you're right. I think that...
Problematic.
That story... And, okay. That story in particular is such a perfect cross-section of who Lovecraft was and the universe that he had in his head.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
yeah.
I feel like a lot of times... He goes too far with the cosmic stuff and loses like the bigger picture of the universe he's creating. But Innsmouth is a perfect cross section of his universe.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, and the fish people.
I love the fish.
Well, people. I like anything that's kind of. I love ocean horror. Mm-hmm, I like aquatic horror. So anything like in that kind of realm, I'm usually attracted to.
I would love to write some more of that. Whenever I write sci-fi or aliens of any type, I always look at deep sea creatures.
Yeah.
Inspiration.
Did you watch Underwater?
No.
You haven't seen that film?
Uh-uh.
Okay. Well, it's like an underwater horror movie, but it's also like a low-key Lovecraft.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's super Lovecrafty.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, you should check that out.
You have to put up with, what's the actor's name?
T.J. Miller.
No, Kristen. Yeah, him and Kristen Stewart.
I don't mind either of them.
I don't mind Kristen. Oh, T.J. Miller. Okay, yes,
the
do.
The guy from
Deadpool.
And
okay.
Yeah, didn't he get in trouble?
He did.
Yeah.
What did he get in trouble for? People always get in trouble.
He had a Me Too moment.
Yeah, something like
oh,
that.
Oh, he got Me Too, did he?
He got Me Too. Yeah. Well, I would... See, I don't like that term because that makes it sound like they're almost a victim. Like, he Me Too'd himself.
Yeah, yeah.
He did a bad thing
and he got called out for it.
Yeah, like he maybe didn't like beat off into a plant in front of someone, but like it wasn't far from that.
Yeah.
Who's speaking up for the plants these
days?
I know. That's what I want to know. Like all these poor plants getting beaten off into all over Hollywood.
Right, like I feel bad for Rose McGowan, but what about that ficus?
I know, what about all those hundreds of studio executives all simultaneously jerking off into plants, you know?
Can't be good for them.
This is the dark underworld of Hollywood that I don't want
this
to
should
know
be
about.
A creature feature of its own, right? Some plant that's mutated by Weinstein's.
They're inseminated,
oh my gosh.
Literally.
Seed
and oh
I
god,
I think you have something.
Half there. Weinstein, half plant.
Yeah,
that might have been how Audrey 2 came to be.
Yeah, that kind of sounds like. I feel like it would look like Audrey 2.
Yeah,
you know? And he definitely wants to be fed a lot. That's for sure.
Oh, and you gross. Ain't in Kansas neither.
I mean, Audrey does kind of look like.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. They're not like, he's the plant version of them, you know?
Yeah. Not quite enough moles. But.
Yeah.
Like, it's hard to make a plant fat because of, you know, the stem. That's where you get caught up with.
Yeah. So, you went to Stokerfest this year.
Yes, yeah.
Talk to me about Stokerfest. Well, first of all, what is Stokerfest?
So, it's StokerCon. But yeah, it's basically a big, it's a big writing convention. And, you know, and other artists, it's all horror. And you have the Stoker Awards, which are, you know, the big event of the year, the Bram Stoker Awards. Always a big deal, but really it's about, you know, the panels and, you know, the little get-togethers and stuff like that. It feels like more of a, you can table and sell books and there's a mass signing. I don't like to do that at StokerCon because I feel like there are other conventions where I can do that. StokerCon, I just want to like chill and learn and absorb and get inspired. And I was actually pretty excited this year that I wasn't nominated because, when I was nominated the previous year, I was just so racked with anxiety.
Definitely.
Also we were in Denver, so I had altitude sickness.
Oh, no.
So it was just, a lot of people did. It was interesting, but I like that Saturday that the awards happened, I spent so much time in my hotel room cause I was just so anxious and nauseous
vomiting.
And I
hard
felt
to enjoy
awful.
The event. Sure.
So it was just amazing because afterwards, once my name wasn't announced, I felt this huge wave of relief.
Sure.
Right. You can just enjoy the event.
Yeah. And it was just so funny because I went to change into like a more fun outfit for the reception afterwards. And I tell you, I took the biggest anxiety shit of my life.
Yes.
It felt so damn good.
It is.
I felt so much less.
Dude, I feel
I like walked into that event like all stiff and oh my god. I walked out like, hey guys, you know, dancing on air. So it's an amazing event if you can attend. It is an expensive event.
Oh, I'm sure.
which is, you know, it's run by the Horror Writers Association, mm-hmm. and this, you know.
Where was it held?
This year it was in Pittsburgh.
Okay.
At the same time Classic. As an Eras concert, a Taylor Swift Eras concert.
Oh, no.
And
oh,
I was so jealous I wanted to be at that concert.
I'm so sick of hearing about Taylor Swift.
I played a gig yesterday at the Staros. I do like a brunch thing there every other week. And Kansas City was playing while I was playing. And like, it was surreal and insane to see the amount of like Swifties that were there watching that game because of her. Like, they didn't give a fuck about football. And like,
over
I knew that that was like a running gag, but I had never seen it in real life. Yeah. And I was like, holy shit, this is wild. Like,
yeah, there's like, and I am a Swiftie, I'll admit.
No way, dude.
Yeah, and but I'm not that.
Well, I like that she's at the football games because I don't like football, so that gives me like one place to avoid them both.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
So I like that.
That's
but
fair.
It was really amazing to see this like mixture because a lot of them were at the hotel that we were at. So this mixture of horror people and Swifties was beautiful. There was glitter everywhere. There was blood everywhere. There was the little girls would like they kept asking us if it was a Dracula convention.
You're like, more or less.
Yeah,
sure.
And I was like, yes, it is.
Yes.
Or if it was horror prom, and we say yes. Also, yes, it absolutely
exactly
is horror
is.
Prom.
Yeah, when people
Why
ask
is there
if
not
you're
a
god,
prom
that's how we treat it. Anyone who goes, like, you get massively dressed up, and it's big horror prom. And so it was a really great time. Denver was fun, too. I'm not going next year. Next year's San Diego, so little too far for me,
Do you mostly do the writer exclusive conventions and events, or do you do like the general genre events too?
Yeah, I mean, I do more like just horror events now.
You should do Creature Feature this year.
I would like to. This year is tough just because I already have a couple of things booked,
sure.
And also it's my 15th wedding anniversary coming up this year, and we never take trips or anything, so we're gonna go to House on the Rock.
Fuck yeah, dude.
What is House on the Rock? Huh?
What is House on the Rock?
It's like this big, like, art installation house, basically. It's, I forget, Wisconsin, I believe.
Oh, okay.
And it was featured in American Gods, I think in the show, too, but I didn't finish the show, but it's definitely in the book.
Okay.
But it's basically, you go in there, and there's, like, this huge carousel and all this art stuff, and it's just, like, a weird, trippy experience, so.
And that sounds awesome.
Yeah, it looks really cool, all the pictures I've seen, so.
Hell yeah.
Well, I gotta kind of pick and choose what I'm gonna do next year.
Yeah.
Because I am gonna be going to Texas as well, so.
Oh, what's going on in Texas?
Ghoulish Book Festival.
Okay.
Ooh, where in Texas?
San Antonio.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. How's Texas? Do you like going to Texas?
I've only been driven through once, so
you refuse to drive yourself. You're like, I will not drive in Texas. You can drive me through.
Yeah. Oh, I'm gonna fly.
Yeah.
Either way, like traveling through or traveling to Texas, very different experiences.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You can travel through Texas and it's gorgeous.
Yeah.
Because you don't have to stop anywhere you don't want to.
Right.
Like,
you don't have to slow down. All the people are just blurs going by the window.
I mean, not all of Texas is Greg Abbott. And like the way and like Ted Cruz and shit.
Yeah.
A lot of it is, but like, I don't know where it's. You said it's in San Antonio.
San Antonio.
Okay, so it's at least not like the Houston, Dallas, like that.
Sure.
That or the Dallas, Fort Worth, Houston area. Like that's the area that scares me.
Yeah, I mean, when I drove through, we stayed in Shamrock, Texas, which was just. That we didn't see much of it. There was a hotel called the Shamrock. That's where we stayed.
Yep.
Iconic.
Some guys bought me and my mom some beers, and that was it. We ate burgers as big as our heads. And
love that.
Went to bed.
That's what you do in Texas. You go big, right? You eat some sort of hunk of meat. That's like an unholy amount of food, and you're like, wow, we fucking did it.
That was it. And then we moved on to the next state.
you get the fuck out of there.
Yeah,
but I'm excited.
They're like, how'd you cook it? We just shot it for a while with our guns, and it got cooked, and here you
Eventually,
are.
Eventually, the heat from the bullets.
The heat sizzled the steak, and here you are. So do you find that you like doing the author-exclusive ones more or less than the...
I mean, I like having kind of just, like, the full horror thing, because that way I can buy jewelry, too.
There you go.
I like that, and I spent so many years doing conventions and events where I was just really, really poor and couldn't buy anything or support anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I wasn't selling much either. So, you know, so I like to be in a place that now I can do my rounds and end up picking up some stuff from people. So I like the the wide horror conventions because you can get art and jewelry and, you know, prints and whatnot. So, you know, I like them all. But the author ones are cool just because it's all my friends. And
I kind of
want
to go to one
chill.
Of the author ones now. Like, I've never been to an author
I've never been either.
Con before.
Yeah, it's a blast.
Tight-knit
it's intense.
Like of you and the other authors,
yeah,
you see a lot of the same faces a lot around?
Definitely. And like a lot of us came up with the same presses. So,
sure.
You know, you have, you know, people like me, Cynthia Paleo, Max Booth, you know, Paul Michael Anderson. We all came up through this one press where we all got trauma bonded because the
sure.
press screwed us all over.
Oh yeah.
And that was like over a decade ago. So whenever we see each other at this event, we're like, trauma bond,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
We get very excited. So, and then you see people like Brian Keene, Mary Sangiovanni. It was awesome to see a lot of events this year. I've seen Clay McLeod, Chapman, and like... And who was a wonderful person to see read and do anything. He's very,
sure.
very fun with his book, What Kind of Mother. He has a bunch of crab claws that he wears around. So there's a whole bunch of like fun people to run into.
I mean, I
like
you're
the crab guy.
You're the crab guy.
I like that rather than wait for the moment, he just creates the moment where the crab claws are.
But he does cool stuff where if someone buys a book, he'll give them a palm reading and stuff like that.
You should start doing that, dude.
Like it says here, you will turn into a crab.
Yeah,
next.
He does things to crabs and he's like, the rivers of blah, blah, blah. Like, he like has this like crazy like lore and entrenched palm reading that is just captivating to watch.
That's amazing. I love that.
Well, so what are you watching? What are you reading?
Well, I just got a bunch of books. I'm gonna start Nestlings by Nat Cassidy soon.
Yeah, you probably come home from these things with like a mountain of books.
Yeah,
right?
A lot of stuff. And I have arcs from Denver Stoker Con that I haven't even read yet.
Nice.
So it's just funny. I have too many books.
How long does it take you to like churn through like a one book?
A long time. Much longer than
so
it used
back,
to.
You get backlogged.
Yeah, because also I have to do, you know, I get a lot of blurb requests as well
mm-hmm,
from
sure.
authors. So I read a lot during the year and not all of it is for my enjoyment,
sure.
Right.
Unfortunately. But right now I really love short story collections and poetry collections because I can get through those faster.
Sure, that makes sense.
But like a novel, it probably takes me like, I'd say maybe like 4 to 6 months now just because
oh, wow.
I get so... you know, torn away and distracted, depending on the novel.
Do you audiobook it ever?
I used to a lot when I had a commute. I would mm-hmm. prefer audiobooks, honestly, but I can't listen to them at home because I feel like I'm not doing anything. And I don't know what to do with my hands.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I feel that. That's strictly a driving or like you need to kill
maybe. I couldn't have gotten through, like, I tried to read Clockwork Orange a million times growing up, and I couldn't, but audiobook.
Yeah.
It's
wonderful. Well, and I think
it
depends on the narrator, too, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. But I was fluent in NADSAT by the end of that audiobook.
Oh,
it was annoying to everybody.
Stakey wakeys.
Yeah.
Eggy
wakeys. Eggy whites.
Eggy wakey whites.
And, like, things like, you know, Middlesex by Jeffrey Eugenides. Like,
mm-hmm.
I mean, that's like a freaking 900-page book. You know, I'm not...
I think the first audiobook I ever did was Infinite Jest for the same reason. But like, here's the thing, is that was like one of the worst choices of audiobook because it makes even less sense.
Oh, gosh.
When it's being read at you.
Oh,
okay.
Interesting. How's
that
possible?
A lot of Infinite Jest, I think, is left up to the reader's interpretation
mm-hmm.
of what David, I can't even think of his name. Doesn't matter. It's a lot of it's up to the perception of the reader and what they're gleaning from what he's writing. So when it's read at you, like it makes even less sense.
It feels like it's a directive, like this is what
and like it's sort of counterintuitive to how it's supposed to read.
I gotta imagine House of Leaves doesn't work in an audiobook.
My brother-in-law gave me that for Christmas last year, and like I don't think I've gotten past like 5 pages.
It's tough.
It's weird.
Like what's that book that's like a novel, but the primary story and the secondary story is written into the sidelines of the book.
I mean, House of Leaves is kind of
that
like
sounds
that.
House of Leaves.
Yeah.
And there's another one that's like that's But yeah, how do you do
yeah,
that?
Yeah, we're like the marginal stuff marginal is, story. Another, so is another yeah, narrative yeah. that fit, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah,
yeah there yeah. was one recently that I heard about that was like that.
I didn't read it, but I remember like reading about it. Mm-hmm. And yeah. like, yeah, how do you...
I think that's really that's really cool if you can pull it off. I think like, right. House of Leaves is great if you can get through it. But honestly, I lent it to my friend after I got it, and she decoded everything for me and gave it back to me. And I was like, this is much easier.
The fact that it needs decoding.
Yeah,
is,
I know.
Is a statement. And, Karen gave me a book. It's translated from Japanese, and the title is 1Q84, but it's supposed to be pronounced Q-teen-84. Mm. And I don't know if you guys have heard of this, but it's basically 1984, but from a Japanese perspective, mm. and like way weirder and way more like high fantasy.
Okay,
that's cool.
And again, it's one of those books where like it's kind of what we're talking about, where you have to have someone that's read it already decode it for you.
Yeah.
I think Karen gave it to me on a dare because she's read it, and I think she's like, try to get through this.
You like books, do you? We'll see how much you like books after this.
You're trying to actively destroy my love of reading? What's wrong with you?
I love experimental stuff like that, yeah, though. Yeah. It's so interesting. I'm writing a story right now in a TikTok live format.
What?
And it's just sure. like, oh my work? God. It's very strange because it's basically like, you know, I'm writing the narrative, kind of showing what's happened. It's, you know, third person present. So everything that's happening on screen. And then I have like the comments kind of look like they're flying up.
Okay.
And then there are things on the side that say, you know, so-and-so has viewed your profile. So-and-so has bookmarked your video and
oh, wow.
kind of stuff like that.
Kudos to you for leaning into like,
I mean,
because like we're almost exactly the same age.
Yeah.
Like, I would much rather Gen Z fuck right off.
Yeah.
Than lean into anything that they do.
I mean, I just, it was weird because it's for something I'm a featured author for, and it's supposed to be Lovecraftian, but stories that would make Lovecraft roll over in his grave. So it's excellent. Supposed to be about like marginalized characters, and also
yeah. sure.
He would
yeah.
probably be
sure.
terrified of TikTok. So.
Wait, but this is only being written. This is not written to be actually made into a video.
I mean it could work.
It could work.
It could work as a video, but yeah.
But
I'm,
it's written to be actually a TikTok stream that you read.
Mm-hmm.
As, okay.
Absolutely.
You
so
should,
I'm
you
doing
two should
my
collaborate.
Best. Yeah, yeah.
I'm saying.
Hey,
I bet it could be done as a video, but yeah, it, yeah. it would take some doing.
Wasn't there just a collection of short stories published that are they're all Lovecraft stories but rewritten from the perspective of women?
I mean, I
wouldn't.
I
swear I heard about
yes,
it. Like, there was an interview
gosh,
on NPR.
Dreams from the Witch House, is that it?
Maybe.
Yeah.
But it's literally like this group of something women authors or yeah. female authors got together and was like, fuck this, we're taking it back.
I feel like it's like a Lucy Snyder, either she's in it or she helped
yeah.
lead it.
Yeah. Well, and it's not just women, it's yeah. marginalized.
Yeah.
Each story is about a different Lovecraft story, but mm-hmm. told from the perspective of a different marginalized group mm-hmm. that Lovecraft would have hated.
Yeah.
And I think that's great.
Yeah. Yeah. It's yeah. a really fun one. I think it's going to be great. But I'm writing it right now. And I'm just like, I saw the publisher at the convention, the editor and stuff. And they were just like, so how's that story going?
No, I noticed that you're not writing right now.
Still working on that novel?
I know. It's one of those things where I'm writing it, but because it's such a strange experimental format, I spend so much time playing with the format
sure.
instead of
yeah.
writing, and I'm like, what
sure.
are you doing? Just finish
I mean,
the damn story.
Is that hard though? Sometimes I guess I feel like that would be really weird to have to balance style versus substance.
Yeah, it
with
is
writing, right?
It is.
Like,
yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
and because, you know, my characters, main characters are such incredible assholes. Yeah,
as is anyone who uses TikTok.
Yeah, no.
Same.
It's like a pair of just asshole-ish ghost hunters, and you know, and I had written so much stuff to convey that they're assholes,
sure.
and now I'm just like, I'm in the point where I gotta pull it back a mm-hmm. bit. Where I'm like, okay, this is not. I don't want this to be a story about like, okay, we know these are assholes. We know they're going to get their comeuppance, and that's all this story is.
Sure.
Right.
Sure.
Because while those are fun, you know, Fall of the House of Usher already happened.
Yeah.
So much of horror is that exact formula.
Yeah, and I have no problem with stories like that, but I know other people do. So I want to make it more accessible and really focus on some of the other characters besides the evil ones.
Yeah.
Besides the fun ones.
Yeah. That being said, I did love Fall of the House of Usher.
Oh, yeah.
We all of us have posted
mm-hmm.
a little bit about it, and I, yeah,
Yeah, I've been through it twice already.
I knew it was going to be good, but, like, I'm always shocked by how good Mike Flanagan shit is. Like, Bly Manor is another one that, like...
I love Bly Manor.
Well, it's, dude, it's barely even a horror tale, right?
It's just, like, a ghost love story. Yeah. It's so nice. And honestly, like, I feel like that one doesn't get its due.
Yeah. No, it doesn't.
I think a lot of people did not rewatch it. And if you, I think the more you rewatch any Flanagan, the better it gets.
Yeah, the more layers you
deeper,
see to it.
Yeah. And honestly, that one's one of Henry Thomas's best performances in Bly Manor.
I mean,
Usher is great too. But
yeah, it was weird for me to see Henry Thomas like really be the bad guy.
I thought he was a standout performance for me seeing him in Usher.
Great in Usher. Yeah, that was rough.
Not
was
ready great. For that.
That was rough. Dad hole.
So did you have a favorite adaptation that he did for Usher?
I mean, I really liked Goldbug. Yep.
Yeah. That was very cool.
Because that's not a story I usually like as much for Poe, and not one I even think about as much.
100%.
So I really liked that. And I really liked, I'm forgetting the character's name, but Samantha Sloyn's. Tamerlane.
Tamerlane.
Yeah.
I thought she was such an interesting character in that dynamic with her husband. So
yeah, that
and
was
the
really
mirrors
cool.
and everything, and the twin that she, you know, like
ate in the womb.
I found that so interesting, and I love watching her in anything.
Mm-hmm.
She's great. It was so funny. We rewatched Midnight Mass too.
Yeah. Oh god,
and
her
you
role
see.
In that.
Her and the actor who plays her husband in Usher are both in Midnight Mass.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And it's just like, it was like how it started and how it's going. Like...
Oh, God, I forgot about her in Midnight Mass. She is terrifying.
She's the villain. The ultimate villain.
Really? Excellent.
I really like Telltale Heart. I thought the Telltale Heart episode was done.
I thought that was so cool, especially for like a story that's kind of done to death.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, he found a way to really get in there and like do a new version of that story.
Yeah.
And like, but also hit the just like kind of be obvious about it too, like in a clever way.
Yeah.
That was good.
Yeah. I really, really enjoyed that one.
I also love that there weren't really any heroes.
Yeah.
In this story at all, right? Like there were people who were maybe neutral and innocent. Like I would argue that Lenore was a neutral innocent, but like she wasn't really a hero.
Yeah.
Right. Like,
except for just getting her mom out of the house.
Yeah, but like, think about the soul taint that she had to take to like accomplish the thing she did throughout the. She's like forever tainted by now. Now she's officially part of the Usher family, and is like even without meaning to been stained by them.
I think it was so interesting with Lenore the entire time. My husband was like, maybe she's not an Usher. Maybe the mom cheated and it's possible. And I was like, no.
Yeah.
I was like, she gonna get it.
She's an Usher. She's gonna get it.
Yeah, she's gonna get it. When I watched it the second time through, I got to the end and it was getting to the part where it's like, you know, are you sure Madeline's okay down there?
Yeah.
And
right.
the thumping and everything. And Dave had fallen asleep. It was dark. I had finished writing, so I was really watching TV.
Okay.
And I was like, I'm turning this off.
That's...
I'll finish this in the light of day because that Madeline Usher death is horrifying.
That's so good.
Yeah.
That was one of the scariest things I've seen. The noise she's making, oh my God.
And it reminds you, like,
great.
Yeah.
I love that Flanagan will always choose a moment in anything he does to remind you how good he is at straight up abject terror.
Yeah.
Because his shit does get really atmospheric and it does get really, like, cerebral and it gets way more about the relationships. But then he'll throw something in. It's like, no. Lest you forget.
Just hold on. You're going to have nightmares.
Remember when I made Carla Gugino cut her own hand off in Gerald's game?
Oh my God.
Do that again.
So good.
She put on the fucking performance of a lifetime in Usher. My goodness.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That was.
Oh, Mask of the Red Death was the one I really liked.
I really
loved how they did that.
Yeah. Yeah. That was pretty. And the like sound mixing and stuff on that was really great. Yep. And yeah. Going
back to something you just said, do you often write while you watch TV?
Always.
Always.
ADHD kids unite.
You don't find the dialogue distracting.
You got to have the radio. You got to have the TV on.
I prefer to have on something I haven't seen before.
Something you have not seen before.
Something I have seen before when I'm writing prose. I can make blackout poetry during anything.
That's yes, that's true.
Nice.
Yeah. So, I mean, it, even just the finding of the poem, you know, because just words are just popping out, so it really doesn't distract me too much. But yeah, I usually do write or edit during some kind of noise, which is I like writing in bars.
Sure.
I like
yeah,
I like the chaos.
I think that's I first saw you writing in bars.
Yeah.
Idiom specifically.
Yeah. That's what I think I'm gonna go there today.
Hell yeah. You could do some writing there?
Yeah, sure.
Hell yeah.
Well, especially
quite
because
like day drinking and writing.
Bro. Yeah, no, I love it. One of my favorite things. I used to know all the all day happy hours in town. But since all my events are kind of coming to an end, everything I have left is podcasts or, you know, online stuff. I really want to buckle down and focus on the novel I'm writing. I feel like I've been not had a lot of time to focus on it. And it's the third in the series. It's the last in the series, the Gardening Guidebooks trilogy. So it's a lot. Yeah. It's a lot of things to tie up. And it goes, since the series starts in like the 50s and mm-hmm. it ends in the early 80s, it's a lot of ground to cover mm-hmm. and a lot of things to tie up and a lot of characters to figure out. Do they get happy endings? Do they get, you know, bad endings?
What's the thing Stephen King says, that whenever you find yourself with where you don't really know where you're going now, just start killing people
start
off.
Killing people
yeah,
off.
Well, that's, like, that's funny because
if you hit a wall, you're like, well, I'll just kill
yeah,
somebody.
Just kill him. Yeah. But then I always snap back to. I used to be a creative writing instructor, and we used to play a game where if the kids started killing off too many characters needlessly, I think it was called like character hot seat or something. We would make them play that character. And then we would play like lawyers, being like asking them,
why do you need to survive?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
That's awesome.
So giving or and then you ask, like, you can switch to different characters. You can switch to the author yourself and be like, what's the reason for this? You know, because you just kids will kill off anybody. Like,
sure.
Willy
sure,
willy.
It's
now.
Fun. Yeah, sure.
So it's fun. Though every
I'm,
or the world
dude,
explodes.
I'm 42 and I'll kill off.
Yeah. So just trying to make it that kind of, well, what's the reason for this? Is this earned kind
mm-hmm.
of thing?
Sure.
But yeah, people are going to start, are going to, you know, drop off. But I have already killed a lot of people in that series. So.
Hell yeah.
Well, you got to start rationalizing it
yeah,
at some point.
Yeah,
you know,
so
the numbers get so high.
Yeah. There are definitely some characters where it's like, I think I put them through enough. They should get a happy ending.
Yeah. Or it's time to
or
take them out
the,
back
or,
and
yeah.
put them
yeah,
down.
Exactly.
Or just let mercy kill them.
Or, you know, a happy ending is kind of not
it's
in the
relative.
Realm of possibility for relative. This series because of how much these characters have gone through, but at least kind of a
sure.
bittersweet ending, a nicer sure. thing. Give them something.
Give the dog a bone.
Yeah.
You know?
Poor Avery Norton.
Hell yeah.
I've done so much to her.
So what's that series? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's the Gardening Guidebooks trilogy, and it starts with Rabbits in the Garden, which is all about a 12-year-old girl named Avery Norton, who has a very overbearing religious mother. And basically for her 12th birthday, her mother gives her the garden to tend and tells her some very special gardening lessons about how you need to keep the garden clean, keep the bad water out, because the rabbits get the bad water, and then the rabbits start switching partners and being bad rabbits. And Faye, her mother, has marked all the rabbits in the garden with a color.
Oh, no.
And then, like, once you see them
that's
switching,
healthy.
Yep, then you see there are bad rabbits in the garden. It comes about pretty quickly in the novel that you're like, okay, Faye. So she's doing things.
Yeah.
So basically, while Avery is at home, she discovers a crypt in her basement that is filled with corpses. And somehow she is the one who gets, you know, accused of this murder. And Faye does admit that, and this all happens pretty early in the novel, so I'm not really spoiling much, but Faye admits that she knows that Avery has been doing this and been covering for her, that she's been doing it in blackouts.
She's been one bad rabbit.
She's been a bad rabbit, and or has she? Has she?
I don't know. You'll have to purchase
you'll have to read
these
it.
Books.
But she does get incarcerated in Taunton Asylum in Massachusetts, and it kind of follows that.
Well, who hasn't?
Who hasn't? Yeah, Lizzie Borden was.
That's right.
So,
yeah, she's just like us.
Yep, and it's very 50s, 60s madhouse novel.
Okay.
There's a lot of those, the ice bath and
uh-huh.
the ECT and the experimental drugs. And so that's where that novel starts. The second novel, Hares in the Hedgerow, takes place 15 years later in, it's 1975 in California, in Concord. So it's a, and it's a more of a cult vibe. Mm. And one of the characters, it's the same characters, but obviously time has passed. The main character in this one is 16 years old, and she is falling in love with this musician who has a very strange family dynamic.
He's a rabbit.
It's a cult.
Oh, of course.
It's a cult.
I mean,
yeah.
One is an analogy for the other.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know any musicians who don't have weird family environments.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
But whatever, you know.
Yeah, she falls in with this group called the Choir of the Lamb.
Oh, no.
Yep. And, you know, kind of heads down that road.
Oh, no.
And it just gets wilder and wilder, and it does. It goes back even farther into Faye's backstory and all this kind of stuff. And the third book takes place in 1982, and it's going to be glam metal horror.
Hell yes.
Yeah. Glam metal horror.
Are you
going
to include a little satanic panic in there?
Oh,
well?
Yeah, baby.
Yes. That was my childhood.
There is even,
so yes.
Yeah, there's a group called Parents Against Satanic Trash, or
Hell
Respect
yes.
the Past.
Hell
yeah. Yes. I love that.
Dude, I always get a kick out of talking to people that were on the other side of satanic. So I was firmly on the evangelical side of satanic panic. My parents were like, everything had Satan in it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We weren't allowed to fucking watch Smurfs because Gargamel was a... Because if you watch Smurfs in the opening credits, there's a scene where Gargamel's like, try to sacrifice a Smurf over a pentagram, and my mom was like, he's a witch!
You're like, yeah, that's exactly right. He is a witch. He's a warlock.
Yeah, but it's always fascinating to me to watch people's reaction that grew up on the other side of satanic panic. When I tell them about my childhood... And then I'm like, and yeah, this was all normal to me until I was like in my mid-teens at least.
Everybody else who's like, my parents didn't even know I existed.
Yeah,
I used to think it sucked, but like the older I get, the more I'm like, I'm glad that I got that exposure to that side of it that early on because it made deconstruction that much easier.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Instead of the other dad who's like, what the fuck is a Smurf?
Yeah, exactly.
You've been doing Smurfs while I'm a mighty
communist
boy.
I'm at work and you're just smurfing around.
I'll tell you who's going to be blue in a minute.
Bro, there needs to be a gritty Smurf remake.
That would be amazing.
We've gritty remade so many nostalgic things. Yeah. We need to do it with Smurfs.
I'd watch it.
Oh, hell yeah. Smurf you straight in the Smurf.
Brian Cox is the voice of Papa Smurf.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, dude, perfect. Perfect.
I fucking love it. That would be amazing.
No bloody use for it.
It'll be the most satanic film.
Dude, that was a solid Brian Cox impression. What did I watch? I watched Manhunter recently, the original.
Yeah, Hannibal Lecter.
Hannibal Lecter movie with him. Part of me almost feels like he... Like, don't get me wrong. Anthony Hopkins is Hannibal Lecter on some level. Yeah. But I feel like Brian Cox's version was much more like Hannibal in the book.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, there's a whimsical quality to Anthony Hopkins' version of it, right? And there's this smooth sort of theatrical quality to Anthony Hopkins' version. In the book, I feel like Hannibal is much more of an animal and much more of like a...
Well, he's much more like how Brian says. He's like an animal. He's like stationary and like he just like eyes you and like can like penetrate you with his intellect.
I think to date, Mads Mikkelsen has played the best Hannibal that I've seen. Like Hannibal is Hannibal from the book.
Agreed.
Where it's just like he's just a pure psychopath, like just a pure predator. And he doesn't have bursts of emotion on either side of the spectrum.
Mm-hmm. He's very calm and chilling.
But it's not, but it's
intoxicating.
Like
intoxicating.
Yeah, it's not like a comforting calm, though. It's like a, wow, this dude is just, he's cold-blooded.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, because he has the resting heartbeat of a tortoise.
Oh my gosh, I love him so much.
So what else you got coming up? You're working on the third in this trilogy of books. Mm-hmm. Is there anything coming out publishing-wise before that's going to be done?
I'm not sure if it's going to be done before, but I am working on a blackout poetry workbook or a playbook, as we're calling it, called Seek and Hide.
Hell yeah.
And it's going
to
be...
spread the love of blackout poetry
to
a whole new generation of
poets?
Absolutely.
I hope so. So it's going to have the blank pages that people can do in there like a couple times. And I, you know, give tips and tricks and show you how, you know, you can go left to right, up and down, or you can start at the bottom. You can start wherever you want. You can use Charlotte's Web to make extreme horror. You can use extreme horror to make a love poem, like all the kind of like all these things. So I think it's going to be really fun. That'll be coming out from Apocrypha Publishing, who did my other blackout poetry collections. I'm also working on a new Blackout Poetry Collection. It's erotic horror, and it's made from Wuthering Heights.
Really, that's the best possible end stage for Wuthering Heights.
Yeah.
I hate that book on such a deep level.
I mean, it really was. I was using it for the playbook because, you know, Jacob sent that to me to use. And then I started making poems, and I'm like, why are they all coming out all like sticky?
Because that whole story is low key smutty.
It is. And I mean, ejaculated is a dialogue tag like a million times in that book. So I was like, it was really asking for it.
You're like, that book was dressed like
it was.
I didn't want to get made like that. Shouldn't have left the house.
Exactly. So it's going to be fun because I'm also writing it in a play format.
Okay.
So you are going to have like my other collections, the blackout poems, the art and the visual and everything, but I'm also putting all the poems together to make full conversations in a play format, and all the characters are things like the knife, the brine, the shell, the spoon, the cream, the fat, the spice. So it's like this, and it's called Feast.
Yum.
So it's going to be very, very dark and gooey and
sticky
and fun and sticky.
Well, I think, you know,
very fill all my holes.
We need that to sort of temper and balance out the rest of the horror stuff.
Society needs holes filled, you know.
Sometimes I think horror gets too cerebral and it gets too top level and tame. And anytime that happens, I just go back and like watch a Cronenberg film.
Yeah.
I'm just like, or like watch Society.
Yeah. Exactly. And I love going like bonkers and like off the wall with it. It's just, it's fun, you know. Sure. I love quiet horror too, and atmospheric, and and I like to write it as well, but I have a lot more fun when, you know, heads are flying off and blood is splattering, or like people are like, you know, death cunnilingus, you know.
It comes up a lot.
We need to introduce our friend Sean Cochran. He's another indie horror writer that like he's very much trauma. Like, that's his style of writing. It's just over the top.
I believe his latest release is Finger Bang Fang Fuck.
Oh, wow.
It's fantastic.
That's great.
Well, we're excited for everything you have coming up. That's all very awesome. Is there anything else you'd like to tell everybody about before you want to sign off?
Yeah, I do have, I'm the featured poet in a collection called Under Her Eye, which is all horror poetry, and it's domestic horror poetry from all female identifying writers. That's coming out in just a week or so, I think a few weeks. And that's really awesome. Okay. It's from Black Spot Books, and it's a huge collection and just really amazing.
And where can our listeners find you?
You can find me at mchuniverse.com, mchuniverse.com.
Nice.
And basically I'm on every social media thing as @TheJessMchugh.
Yep.
Awesome.
Yep.
Well, Jess, thanks
so much
for coming into the studio
and
hanging out with
us.
Hell yeah, dude. You should come back. Well, I mean, we live in the same town, so you can come
anytime.
Back whenever you want.
Anytime.
Yeah. Bring your workbook and we'll make some blackout horror together.
Heck yeah, I would love to.
Cool.
Love to.
All right. Thanks, Jess.
Bye. Thank you.
All right, so that's our conversation with Jess McHugh. She's a treat to talk to.
She really is, man. I really dig her perspective on a lot of stuff. I think that she, like I said, I think that she's handling the sort of way she's rocketing towards fame right now really well.
Yeah, she's got a lot going on. I think you guys are going to see a lot more from her coming out, and you're going to hear Jess McHugh's name a whole lot more in the horror and the literary world. Hope you guys enjoyed everything. Remember, you can check out everything she has going on at mchuniverse.com, and you can check out everything we got going on at campnightmare.com, including our store where you can pick up some t-shirts, all our new merit badge themed glitter stickers and enamel pins are there. We got all kinds of good stuff. And if you just want more a camp, you just head over to patreon.com/campnightmare, and you can get our secret episodes, discounts, and pre-orders to merch. This month, we are getting Greg back in the studio.
Yep, we're going to do our Thanksgiving turkey watch along.
Next week is going to be Patreon only, and we're going to have a Thanksgiving turkey with Greg. This is what, our fourth Thanksgiving turkey on Patreon,
I think. Yeah.
So I'm not even sure what movie we're going to be watching, but it's going to be bonkers. And again, only way to get access to any of that stuff is patreon.com/campnightmare.
Yeah, so as always, we want to give a big shout-out to our sponsors, Wonder Book and Video, WonderBK.com, as well as Special Tees, which is special-tees.com for all your printed merch needs. As always, guys, I am JB.
And I'm Jordan.
Remember, guys, nothing is real.
And don't tell us what to do.
Thanks for listening to Camp Nightmare. Follow us on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, and Slasher. And for full campfire tales, interviews, X-Files, and more, visit campnightmare.com.
And join our Patreon community of happy campers for monthly secret episodes, exclusive merch deals, B-movie watch-alongs, access to our Discord channel, and more. Visit patreon.com/campnightmare.